proceed to the fifth case, Lewis versus Peterson. Mr. Hansen.
May it please the court. My name is Tim Hansen of Michael Best and Friedrich, and I appear on behalf of the appellant, Bright B. Lewis, along with my co-counsel, Juan Ramirez, and I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal to be presented by Mr. Ramirez. The parties agree that Mr. Lewis is actually innocent as a matter of law, as found by the district court judge, of the 924C charge for which he is currently incarcerated. The parties also agree, as was found by the district court, that Mr. Lewis has never had an opportunity to test the legality of his detention, a detention that is concededly illegal. The parties also agree, and the district court assumed, that 2241 is the proper mechanism by which Mr. Lewis can test that legality of his detention. On that basis alone, this court has the authority to vacate the 5-year sentence that Mr. Lewis is currently serving for his conviction under the 924C charge was invalidated under Bailey. The government argues that Mr. Lewis must not only establish his actual innocence of the charged offense, the charge to which he pled guilty, but he also must prove his actual innocence of the more serious foregone 924C charge. We contend that the 924C charge that occurred in May, which was dismissed, and the 924C charge that occurred in June, which he pled guilty, the dismissed charge in May is not more serious than the 924C charge to which he pled guilty, so he doesn't have to establish his actual innocence. There's no requirement that he establish his actual innocence to an equivalent charge or a lesser charge, only a more serious foregone charge. And under the Sixth Circuit holding in Pebbler, it's clear that the court need only look at the foregone charge to determine if it's more serious. In Pebbler, there were three 924C charges. One was pled guilty. Two were dropped. Again, under the petitioner brought a Bailey claim. And the two 924C charges, when viewed in combination, were more serious. The court never needed to reach the issue. Or rather, the court clearly understood that those more serious charges could not be found guilty because those were more serious charges. But this court need not reach that issue because the charges that were foregone are not more serious. Assuming that it's even possible that a 924C charge can be more serious than a 924C charge, the proper basis to make that determination is not to use the enhancement penalties, as the government argues. The government essentially says that a 924C charge, when viewed in conjunction with another 924C charge, the second one will receive a 20-year enhancer, and that makes it a more serious charge. However, under that reasoning, any 924C charge, when viewed in conjunction with any other 924C charge, is more serious. It would eviscerate the holding in Bowsley, which requires a petitioner need only demonstrate actual innocence to a more serious foregone charge. Now, the government is essentially saying that the May 924C charge is more serious than the June 924C charge, and the June 924C charge is also more serious than the May 924C charge. It's a circular conclusion, it makes no sense, and it doesn't allow the court to make a determination of what charge is more serious. It's essentially whatever the government says it is. Normally this wouldn't present a difficulty because oftentimes if there are two 924C charges in the same indictment, we don't need to make a determination as to which one is more serious. The one can enhance the other without respect to when they happen. However, when the court is charged, as it is under Bowsley, with making a determination of more serious, you can't simply look at the conviction date because that doesn't get you to more serious. It doesn't tell you which one is more serious because it gets you to the conclusion that both are more serious. Either one is more serious than the other. In the rare cases presented here, where the court must determine that which one is more serious, the only workable methodology is to look at the chronology of the events. And here, a May charge that was dismissed cannot enhance a June charge that he pled guilty to. Something that happens prior in time cannot enhance something that happens later in time. And I think that
well,
this
why not?
I'm sorry?
Why not?
Well, I think under the plain language of 924C, it says that in the case of a second or subsequent conviction, but here there was no second or subsequent. They're saying that they're trying to apply May, the May dismiss charge. They're arguing that that is more serious because it is second or subsequent to the June charge. I think on the plain face of 924C, that's impossible. And I think with the principle of lenity would indicate that to the extent there might even be an ambiguity in 924C, it must be construed in favor of Mr. Lewis.
Would you have a reason for that or just the language?
The language is one argument, and also the Eighth Circuit's holding in Johnson, where they said prior conduct.
That's not an argument. That's just a repetition of your language argument. You have some other language, some other type of argument, or just the language?
Essentially, just the language and common sense that indicates that when you have to make a determination, and the government's argument is not a proper way to make that determination. They even implicitly concede that chronology is the appropriate mechanism by which you judge whether it's more serious. They would use the conviction date. We argue it's the date that the conduct occurred, the charge occurred.
Is that the only way to determine which is more serious is by date of conviction?
Well, the sentencing guidelines provide what's more serious, but the only way that you get to determine that is to look at essentially, yes, the date is going to be determinative, because if you look at a 924C charge, it can't be any more serious than any other 924C charge.
If you have a series of 924C charges, how do you determine which is more serious? The only way is by date of...
Exactly. I would like to stop here if there's no further questions and reserve the remainder of my time for Mr. Ramirez.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Tom Keith, and I'm an assistant United States attorney for the Central District of Illinois. And I have two arguments that I'd like to pose to the court. One of them is the legal, and the other one is public policy, if I have time for that one. But basically, what the appellant is arguing here is that we must look at the date of defense. Because if we look at the date of conviction, then we follow the plain language of the statute. The plain language of 924C says that a second or subsequent conviction carries the sentence of 20 years. So under those circumstances, no two 924C convictions in the same indictment would carry the same weight or the same sentence or the same punishment. And there's no disagreement that we're looking at punishment. And we're also looking at how we're to look at how a defendant is to be punished in the context of going back in time and looking at the time the plea agreement was entered into. Had he been convicted of both these offenses, would one be more serious than the other? And we have to go back in time. And two 924Cs, one is always more serious than the other. I'm going to argue that the Johnson case cited by the appellant in the Eighth Circuit and his argument is wrong in respect to both the plain language of the statute and in the definition of what a prior sentence is in the sentencing guidelines. The statute, when it says a second or subsequent sentence carries a 20-year sentence, makes no mention of the date of offense. It speaks solely of the conviction itself. And under the sentencing guidelines, when it defines what a prior sentence is, it makes no reference to the date of the offense. What it says is that a sentence that is imposed prior to the instant offense is a prior offense without respect to when the occasion of the offense occurred. And so that's basically our argument, is that a second sentence is always a more serious offense. And if we look back in time, as if he had not pled guilty to one and one to one was dismissed, one is always more serious than the other without respect to the date of conviction. I'd like to point out to the court, too, in the Johnson case that was cited here, there is only one reference in the Johnson case to support its position that the offense of occurrence is what dictates what constitutes a second or subsequent sentence, and that is its own circuit's Foote case. And that's the only reference, and that case supports us. In the Foote case, the issue was, when two 924Cs are brought in the same indictment, can one be used as an enhancer for the higher sentence under the statute? And the court in the Eighth Circuit in the Foote case says yes, and it cited to the plain language of the statute. Whenever there's a second or subsequent 924, then one is the enhancer. It went on in Ditka to say that the district court relied on the date of occurrence. So in Ditka, it used, the district court did this anyway, so they're supporting their position. But it never said that the date of occurrence changes or trumps the plain language of the statute itself. And I might add that subsequent implies a prior conviction, but second conviction implies just a first without respect to chronology. So you can have two 924Cs in the same indictment, and one would be more serious than the other if you look at the penalties that will be imposed. With respect to the public policy standpoint, it's our position that you have to look at the conviction itself and without respect to the date that the actual offense occurred, because it gives greater clarity, and not only that, it's supported by just the plain language of the sentencing guidelines and the statute. In almost every indictment, the indictment alleges on or about a date certain. Sometimes an indictment will allege an ongoing or continuing offense. There's never or rarely any clarity to an actual date. With a conviction, it is a date certain. And also with respect to the public policy, if we go by the offense or the occurrence of the offense, whether a defendant gets relief in this situation under habeas corpus petition is based on fortuitous circumstances. For example, reverse the dates in this case, and the appellant concedes this. If the dates were reversed, if he had the other charge dismissed, then he would have pled guilty to the earlier charge or the later charge, and the dismissed one would have been the earlier charge. I may have those backwards if I have this backwards. But if you reverse the fact, he admits in his argument that we would not be here because the earlier charge could be used as the enhancer to support the higher offense than the later charge. And that is exactly the case in the P4 case, where the petitioner or the appellant in that case, the dismissed charges were 1992 charges. The one he pled guilty to was a 1993 charge. And he says that supports his position because the dates of the occurrence are in chronological order, and you can use the earlier charges as enhancers, so therefore the later charges are the more serious. So depending on how those dates are arranged, we'll determine whether or not an individual appellant would get relief under these circumstances. And at the time that these parties, when this case was pled to in Nebraska in 1995, neither of the parties could presuppose that the Bailey decision of the Supreme Court would change the law. And so strictly by where the dates fall, it's a fortuitous result for someone or against someone if we was to go by the date of occurrence. And that's simply our position, is that the statutory language and as a matter of public policy you can't look at the date of the offense, you have to look at the date of conviction, and one or either of these 924C counts that he has pled to at the same time in the plea agreement entered into, one was more serious than the other. And if the court doesn't have any questions, I'll yield back my time.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you.
Ms. Mariano, Ramirez.
May it please the court, Juan Ramirez for petitioner. Your Honors, the core purpose of habeas corpus or collateral review is to minimize the risk that one stand convicted for a act that the law does not make criminal. All parties agree here that Mr. Lewis is currently incarcerated for an act the law does not make criminal. Now, to accept the government's argument, both the legal argument and the policy argument, I would argue that not only is that risk maximized, but it's assured. Turning first to the legal argument of 924C, a charge that occurred in May, as a practical matter, cannot be used as an enhancer to a crime that happened in July, as are the facts under this case. The May charge, to just apply the plain language of 924C, is a first, not a second, as the language requires. It occurred before, not subsequent, as it is clearly stated under 924C. Furthermore, looking to the Eighth Circuit's decision in Johnson, the court only applied the 924C charge. They looked at it, they compared it, they applied the language and gave meaning and effect to the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Bosley. In order to give meaning and effect to that language, one must compare the admittedly invalid charge to the more serious foregone charge. You can't take a dismissed charge and combine it and then say, now let's do a comparison. You always have to compare the invalid charge with that which is dismissed. Furthermore, the Sixth Circuit's decision in Pedler versus United States, there were two 924C charges as opposed to one being compared to another. And in that particular case, Your Honors, what the court did or what the government did was they combined the dismissed charges. They didn't take the 924C charge that was dismissed and combine it with the invalid one. To do so would literally render every single charge that you would combine with an invalid one more serious. It's just not a realistic approach to determine how a petitioner in Mr. Lewis's position can cure a procedural default. Two is always more than one. Second always follows first, and subsequent always follows what occurred before.
Why does it say second or subsequent if it's the same?
Well, our argument, Your Honor, is that in order for a 924C charge to enhance, it has to have a reference point. And that reference point is the conduct and the chronology, as the Johnson Court reasoned. Earlier conduct cannot be used as an enhancer to subsequent conduct. And as my co-counsel stated, that in terms of whether or not the statute is ambiguous, one has to construe that to the benefit of Mr. Lewis in this particular case. Any crime is going to be more serious if you're going to allow the government to take, well, we dismissed all these charges in exchange for a plea bargain. We know that you're in jail for a crime you didn't commit, but in order to prove that the dismissed charge is more serious, we're going to stack the deck against you even further by saying we're going to combine everything on top of what is already an invalid charge. It has to be compared against those charges to give meaning and effect to the decision involved. Your Honor, I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Ramirez. Our thanks to all.